We heard in the closing session of yesterday from Ray Dalio, the founder of Bridgewater. It's now our great pleasure to introduce Head of Research Karen, and it's my colleague Amanda who will be speaking with her. Over to you, Amanda. Thank you.
Thanks, Colin. And as Colin mentioned, it's a great pleasure to welcome now Karen Carney-Ortambo, who's the Head of Investment Research at Bridgewater, the largest hedge fund in the world. And there, Karen looks after more than 150 investment professionals. Welcome to you, Karen.
It's great to be here, Amanda. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So today's session, we're going to run through a brief presentation where Karen's going to look at how to integrate sustainability into portfolio construction and, importantly, building on Fiona's comments of impact alongside risk and return. And then once Karen's briefly outlined that presentation, we'll come back for some Q&A. So over to you, Karen.
Thanks. It's great to be here. And it's so exciting that you have a conference with this title, because it's gotten to the point where it's very, it's increasingly obvious that it's not feasible to be an investor without thinking hard about issues of sustainability. Starting with the fact that being an investor at its most fundamental level is really about understanding what's happening in the world and building a map of that and having an outlook for the future of where the world is going. And it's almost impossible to look at the world today and try to understand it and form a map of where it's going without thinking of issues that have to do with social, environment, and governance. Almost impossible. So I'm going to speak about that briefly, sort of where we see the world going and why sustainability issues are so important within it, before jumping to this notion that there's no need to sacrifice. It is achievable. The time is now that investors that care and want to explicitly consider sustainability and their impact in their decisions can successfully do that at scale today. And I'm going to speak a little bit about what we think is a process for doing that that can really work for any investor at any scale. So I'll start with just as an investor, as I was saying, I think that building maps to make sense of a changing world is sort of the key thing that you're being relied upon to do as an investor. We think of the world as a machine. You could think about the cause-effect relationships, how A causes B, and leads you to be able to look at conditions in the world today, put them through how you think the cause and effect relationships work, and then imagine what the outcomes are, perceive what's happening in the world, and create shared knowledge and so on to put through that understanding of how the world is operating. And when we do that today, it is almost impossible to do that without speaking about sustainability issues. And so what I have here is kind of on the left, I would say the most traditional thing you could say about the environment today, which is that we're in the greatest downturn we've had since perhaps World War II. And yet it is an extremely difficult time to provide stimulation in that environment. Interest rates have been zero for a very long time. There's been a lot of money printing. And now probably the most important shift happening in sort of traditional economic terms, if you will, is the shift to the fact that fiscal stimulation is now required to operate with monetary stimulation together to have any impact on the economy. And that shift could be talked about in pure economic terms, but you'd be remiss not to look at the huge social consequences. Fiscal stimulation is inherently distributional. Fiscal policies, when governments act, they have the mandate to go in and really determine huge impacts on social issues, on environmental issues, and even on governance issues. And then on the right is kind of the backdrop where, in my mind, looking at the fact that, you know, rates are zero, we've had very deep downturn under COVID, misses the huge amount of rising tensions and conflict that have occurred in societies that brought us to this point. And, you know, very briefly, huge rise in inequality, and you're seeing populism, depending on how you measure it, at the highest level since the 1930s. We've created an index where we look at every election that's occurred and tried to sort of identify who are the populist candidates. And you'd have to put this world together, both with the classic economic measures and with that backdrop of rising tensions and conflicts, both within and outside countries, to be able to really understand how the world is evolving. And I'll give two very quick examples of how we in our research think about these issues and create real measures of understanding them and trying to incorporate them into our investment process. On the left, on the blue, you can see kind of classic macroeconomic conditions, the sort of things that have been enshrined into central bank mandates for many, many years, how the unemployment rate is doing, how inflation is doing. And in red, our measure of social conditions, issues like health, safety, education, the social fabric of society, whether or not the air is clean when you go out. And you basically had the largest divergence we've seen coming out of the financial crisis, where a huge expansion was very successful in terms of kind of classic falling unemployment rate, macroeconomic conditions, and yet social conditions deteriorated throughout that time. And now with COVID and being in this very deep downturn, those pressures are really coming to a head as both social conditions and classic macroeconomics are deteriorating together. And so you're seeing policymakers weigh these social conditions a lot more explicitly in their choices for both monetary and fiscal policy. And that's why the importance of measuring them and understanding them as an investor is rising. And on the right is, of course, climate change. And climate change is going to have very large macroeconomic impacts. And to measure them as an investor, you really have to go back to this picture of building a map of the world and thinking about the cause-effect relationships. Being able to go from how many emissions there will be in the world to what the temperature change will be. And that is, you know, a certain set of cause and effect, all the way to from a temperature rise, how that all affect different regions around the world, depending on their situation. How prepared are they? How warm is it there already? It's a very different situation for it to get warmer in Canada relative to India, since Canada can adapt, of course, technology that's been in other parts of the world for much warmer weather. And how prepared are these countries? A Singapore looks very, very different from its neighbors. And from this, you see a very wide range of what the potential impacts of climate change might be that can be quantified. And when you compare it to kind of the long-term potential growth without any drags of countries, especially in places like Asia and Latin America, it's quite significant, which means that as an investor, it's very hard to think about regions like Asia and South America without asking yourself that question. What will happen with climate change? Where will we be on these different scenarios? And what will lead that in order to understand the world? So let me shift gears to building a portfolio. And the biggest kind of change in perspective that investors, in our view, can have is shifting from only looking at the financial characteristics of a portfolio, risk and return. And within that, you might ask a question like, what are the risks from climate change? But you're still in risk and return space, to making that change to a three-dimensional investing model. Making that change to saying, I don't only care about risk and return. I also care about impact. I care both about the financial characteristics and about the impact the portfolio can have on the world. In other words, I actually want to put my capital to finance solutions that can make a difference in the world. That is a huge change in perspective. And a few years ago, I think it seemed very aspirational and impossible, in a sense that that was a cool idea, but not something achievable, practical, very tractable, especially for large institutional investors. We believe that today, with where we are now, this is now very possible, practical, and achievable for any investor at any scale to build their portfolio in all three dimensions, to think about risk and return and impact, and be able to accomplish all three in a large, scalable institutional portfolio across asset classes. And that is a huge change in perspective. So let me talk a little bit about how we've built sort of a machine, the same way we'd look at the cause-effect relationships, how you go from emissions to impact on a climate, how you go from this desire to have both impact and risk in return to actually doing that in your portfolio. And the first thing you need to do is really systematically pick assets. And so if you're going to pick assets, you have to ask yourself, what is your goal? We have really chosen to focus on furthering the UN Sustainable Development Goals. They're a great roadmap for where the world needs to go and are both broad and encompassing, as well as have very specific targets. And once you've defined those goals, you want to have a broad triangulated assessment for every asset, what its impact is, how it actually furthers the UN Sustainable Development Goals. And so this is a timeless process that one can put in any goal that they have and then go through a wide range of research organizations, learn about and rate all the different assets on the methodology of really whatever it is the goal they picked, in this case, the UN SDGs, pick those assets that have the most positive impact. And once you do that, what you see is that those assets that meet those goals of impact are not very different than other assets in your portfolio. The equities that you pick, the bonds that you pick, they're going to have very similar characteristics to the other assets that you're traditionally building a portfolio with. And what that means is that you can take those assets and build them into whatever portfolio construction you believe in. At Bridgewater, this model that I'm showing is our best understanding of how the world will evolve, meaning that we believe that the world's equally likely to have above expected growth, below expected growth, above expected inflation, below expected inflation. So we want to collect risk premiums as efficiently as possible across all of these outcomes without knowing which of these will occur. That is our portfolio construction methodology. And you can see that in that portfolio construction methodology, we can insert in any of those assets that we picked through this highly triangulated systematic process to say, these are assets that meet our goals of, in this case, furthering the UN Sustainable Development Goals, and put them in. And now I've built a broad portfolio with all of the assets that I picked. Then I'd be remiss not to mention measuring the impact of those assets out the other end. The big advantage of having picked your goals up front and said up front, what I care about are the UN Sustainable Development Goals, means that out the other end, you could really measure the impact of your assets. You could say, if I picked a certain company because I thought it would have a certain impact, let me look a few years after owning it and see whether it really had that impact and get a real impact assessment. And here the world is changing very rapidly. The broad ecosystem of investors, like everybody attending this conference, that care about these issues more and more and are demanding to be able to not only assess assets, but also after the fact assess their impact, are building a huge data ecosystem that we think will continue to get better and better in allowing investors to move from this very high level goal setting of the UN Sustainable Development Goals in this case, all the way to really seeing the impact out the other end. Now back to the portfolio construction process. In our view, because you have such a wide range of assets that can further the UN Sustainable Development Goals or meet other impact objectives, there is a path to not sacrifice return and risk characteristics and achieve a balanced portfolio that lets you really feel that the capital you're allocating not only meets financial goals that you want to meet, but also meets impact goals, really achieving that sort of three-dimensional impact. And this is achievable today, in our view, for investors at any size with more or less any constraints. The most important thing is that shift in the mentality to say, I'm trying to achieve all three of these things, risk, return, and impact, systematically assess the assets, and then be able to put them in a portfolio to achieve this sort of result.
Well, Karen, you make it sound very simple. I'm not sure that it is quite that simple. I want to sort of go into a little bit more detail about the SDG-aligned assets. And, you know, you said you can rate assets on the SDGs. Can you give us a little bit more information on how you do that? What are the inputs into that rating? What data do you use? Where are you getting your information from?
Absolutely. Well, as I said, the data ecosystem is growing rapidly, which means that what we're doing today, I imagine, will be 10 times better in a few years already. But what we really loved about the SDGs when we were looking to see what are the goals we want to align to is that on one hand, they're very aspirational, you know, no poverty, very high level. On the other hand, they go all the way down to very, very specific metrics that cover a very broad roadmap of where to go. And that lets you be able to look at individual entities in the world and connect their activities, their actual activities, to meeting any of those particular goals. And we felt that connecting it to their activities was very important, that we didn't want to just go off of reputation or what people's official policies were, but to really look at their activities. And the SDGs are such a great framework for doing that. And so we basically went through a search of different research organizations because we believe triangulation is extremely important and that any one opinion can be very highly skewed about the activities of any entity. and basically look through, I want to say, 35 research organizations, and have so far picked three that we thought were most reliable and going in, really understanding the activities of different entities and connecting them to specific SDGs and being able to say, we believe that these activities further these sustainable development goals in these particular ways. And that level of specificity also lets you come out the other end. And as I was saying, kind of do an impact assessment. And when I say the process is systematic, it's greater than what any one person could do in their head, getting to know every company in the world or every bond issuer in the world and understanding their activities. It utilizes all the expertise of many different researchers doing that work, and it triangulates them. So if there's agreement across a few that this is what this entity achieves, then you go ahead and say, I believe this is a highly impactful organization. I want to be giving capital towards it.
We've got a couple of questions coming in from the audience, Karen. Patrick Chu, who's an analyst at HESTA, a super fund here in Australia with $40 billion in assets. How do you identify black and hopefully white swans and integrate these in portfolio construction? What such swans do you see in the ESG domain?
Well, you may mean a lot of different things by the swans. So let me take a hunch of what you'd be meaning, which is, and I actually love the COVID analogy so much, because when people looked at pandemics ahead of COVID, you could do all of the pandemic research you wanted in the world, and you would still have a very, very, very wide range of outcomes of how a pandemic might pan out. And I can promise you that what happened in 2020 would not be in your 80% middle assessment. It would be very, very much a fringe of what you might think a pandemic might look like. And that lesson is extremely resonant when it comes to thinking about ESG issues, because you run into the same thing in thinking about issues like climate change, that there's a very wide range of outcomes, but you have to seriously weigh the fact that some outcomes that are well outside of kind of the central scenario that's being laid out could really occur. We just lived through it in 2020 in the case of a pandemic. And so to us, that means that as an investor, the most important thing is to stress test the portfolio and think about extreme events that you wouldn't be able to predict, and basically know, what are you really predicting? What are you not predicting? You're probably not predicting a cyber attack. You're probably not predicting a major climate change calamity. And so if that's not part of what you intend to do in your portfolio construction, how do you protect against that? And how many losses, how much losses are you willing to take? How much protection do you need to buy? And how do you be diversified against that? Knowing that you don't want to be overly concentrated in an outcome that you don't have any insight on. You don't know if it'll happen or not.
There's another question here, Karen, from Sarah Williamson, who's the CEO of Focusing Capital on the Long Term. Can you please explain how you're thinking about net zero 2050 portfolios and if or how they can be built effectively?
Well, we would think about it as that is one more goal that you could make as the goal of what you're trying to build. And so I showed an example of building towards the SDGs, of which, you know, achieving net zero is certainly a piece of, but it's not the only thing that you're building towards. You could make that a secondary goal alongside the SDGs or your only goal. And what you would do is the first step in that sort of process would be set that goal of that's a very important goal to you in the portfolio. And then you would want to assess every potential asset in the portfolio, particularly against that goal. And our read is that there are a sufficient number of very scalable assets that can let you build a portfolio that is a great portfolio with that goal in mind. And that the more investors determine that that's an important part of their portfolio construction, the more assets there will be, because the incentive will be there for more and more organizations to join that pledge and to make sure that they're making clear that if you allocate capital with them, your capital will go towards achieving that goal.
Karen, we've been lucky enough to have some of your colleagues in the last couple of years present at our Global Fiduciary Investors Symposiums, and Greg Jensen, one of your co-CIOs, presented in June, talked a lot about the low rate environment and low bond yields and the ability to find diversifying assets in that environment. Can you talk a little bit about that also in the context of the SDGs and having that impact lens alongside risk return?
Absolutely, because a lot of investors in our minds are overly skewed towards equities. And that is even more true in the context of promoting sustainability, because you have an environment where kind of providing equity to a company that could go after sustainability goals is very appealing. And with nominal bonds playing less and less of a role, that feels like the greatest asset that investors are concentrated in. And in our view, that's a huge mistake to just be concentrated in equities, because it leaves you very naked in case anything really happens. And we don't know where the world is going to go, and there's a wide range of outcomes. And nominal bonds that used to play that primary role of protecting you, primarily when growth slowed through falling yields, when central banks would ease interest rates going into a growth decline, really can't play that role very much anymore. And so as investors that care about risk and return, as well as sustainability, that leaves you needing to look for other assets that would be particularly diversifying to equities, but still meet impact goals. Probably the highest potential we see in that space is really to get inflation-linked bonds. There are a lot of great issuers that are, through their activities, promoting the sustainable development goals. I would list the multilateral development banks like the World Bank or the Inter-American Development Bank that are very much enshrined into their mandates to go pursue these goals. And they have the ability to issue to investors bonds that are, you know, where the capital is going to go, and at the same time will be inflation protected, such that if the world evolves towards reflationary policies, those inflation-linked bonds can be particularly well-suited to balance the stocks in your portfolio. And that is just one good example where thinking hard both about the risk and return characteristics of the asset and about the impact leads you to both an issuer and a type of structuring of the asset that can be much more useful to you in this environment than a traditional nominal bond.
Karen, over the years, as ESG and sustainability as an industry, if you like, has developed, there's been lots of conversations around a foregoing alpha if you want to invest in ESG. At Bridgewater, how do you think about alpha and ESG together? Do you think that there is alpha in ESG?
Well, our view is that any one factor that you try to isolate and say, is there alpha in this one factor, will never be good enough. Because trying to predict where the world is going to go, the world is extremely multifaceted. And you're always going to have many things that affect where the world is going to go. So accomplishing alpha is always very difficult. And you would never want to limit yourself and say, I can only use a very small subset of what drives the world. That said, as I was describing, if you want to look at the world and try to have a prediction of where it's going to go, you can't ignore sustainability issues. They're critical. You have to look at how societies are evolving, what's happening with populism, whether or not governments are going to step up and address social change and address social disparities and do that through fiscal policy. These are critical, critical questions to understanding where the world is going to go. And so the way we would see it is, ESG factors are very critical in generating any alpha because they're just a critical part of how the world is operating. That is the reality we live in. But only looking at those factors would be a very limiting way to think about alpha. And alpha is difficult enough. You want to weigh all of the important considerations in the world in order to be able to understand where it's going to go if you want to have any hope of actually adding value.
Karen, we've got one last question from an audience member here calling in from Greece, Sophia Papastefano. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, from a fund-to-fund manager in Greece. In your investment process, could you identify and target specific SDG KPIs with high multiplier effect to drive investment decisions?
Absolutely. One of the things we saw when we started mapping organizations to the SDGs was that some SDGs and some KPIs spoke much better to existing business models than others. And so, you know, at the extreme side, I personally am very invested in ending violent conflict around the world, but it is very, very difficult to identify where can I invest my money as an investor that'll help meet any of those KPIs. And in contrast, there are a lot of other SDGs where we found lots of organizations that are out there. And so we think in many ways, our role as an investor is to help share that, to make that open, to make that public, to make clear as we triangulated all the different SDGs and where we could put our money, where we found that high bang for the buck, where we found lots of organizations that we thought were really well aligned with pursuing the SDGs and where we didn't, with the hope that it is then clear to basically actors in the world, that investors will be there to finance them, to give them the money, to help finance the SDGs if they bring about business models that particularly pursue those kind of unmet KPIs, those KPIs that don't have a lot of people coming after them. And through that, we think that we can make a big difference in the broader ecosystem, being there as a capital provider that wants to give to organizations that promote the SDGs, and that is identifying where there are gaps with who is doing that and on which particular KPIs we're not seeing a lot of investment opportunities.
Well, Karen, it's been wonderful to have you on the program today. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. And we're thrilled to have Bridgewater sharing in this public forum your ideas around sustainability and the SDGs. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Amanda.